It's possible Utahns just may be changing their minds about the death penalty. Something is altering not only the public's attitude about capital punishment, but apparently lawmakers too. Over the course of the last few years, conservatives have begun opposing the death penalty. They say it goes against core conservative principles, that it's too expensive, the long, drawn-out process is cruel to victims' families. And, of course, conservatives are against big government, and many say this, you know, putting to death someone, that's about as big as government gets. This is More to Say. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And today we're exploring the conservative case against the death penalty and where Utah fits in the scheme of all of this. KUER's Whitney Evans has been looking into the issue. Whitney, welcome.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me.
So, just basically, realistically, how close is Utah from actually ending state-sponsored executions?
Well, I think if you look at it from the standpoint of House versus Senate support in the legislature, it passed easily in the Senate in 2016. It had trouble once it reached the House. Yeah. Apparently, Steve Urquhart, who sponsored the bill, he was a senator at the time, said that his House sponsor lost heart on the matter. Mm. And I think and Steve Urquhart seems to think that while lawmakers themselves may be changing their minds because of these conversations that are sort of happening on the Hill that may not be happening in the public sphere, mm-hmm. That lawmakers might be leaning more toward repealing the death penalty, but they're afraid of what their constituents will think, yeah, because that same conversation isn't happening out in the public sphere.
Right. We'll get back to that. I think that's really interesting. So there are these number of arguments for abolishing the death penalty. There are these moral ones and there are these practical ones. The practical ones that a lot of conservatives talk about, it's too expensive. It's, you know, this long process is really cruel. Innocent people are being executed. How many of these are playing out here in Utah, the way lawmakers are thinking about that?
Well, I mean, there are 9 people on death row in Utah right now. None of them are really appealing because they believe they're innocent. There's not really any reason to believe the people who are on death row right now are innocent. Nobody has been exonerated on death row in Utah. They have been exonerated in other states. People who are appealing life sentences or some other sentence have been exonerated in, yeah, Utah. So in a sense, that concept is playing out, but not necessarily on death row.
Yeah. Let's talk about Valerie Young. Tell us a little bit about her first.
So she is a school teacher in West Valley City, and she grew up both in Salt Lake City and Idaho. But when she was a teenager in Idaho, she was 18 years old and her brother was 16 years old. And they had this great relationship. And he was driving home from football practice on his motorcycle. He just stopped at the gas station to cash his paycheck. He got in a fight with some boys in town. And the next thing we know, his body was found on the side of the road. And he'd clearly been stabbed in the head, and no one was ever charged. They, you know, said it was an accident. They sort of left the case open. And Valerie goes through this process of, you know, what happens when a family member of yours, you know, they were murdered, and you can't do anything about it, and you can't get that immediate justice that you're looking for. So she goes through that thought process as an 18-year-old girl thinking, I'm just going to kill them myself.
You want them to pay. You want to hurt them. And as I sat and thought about that, I thought, maybe I could shoot them. I could make them pay for that. And as I thought of that, as my 18-year-old self, I had access to the guns. What if I kill the wrong one? Which one did it? Do I kill them all? I can't kill them all. And then I thought, can I really kill somebody?
I think what's really interesting is the way her mind is the processing, and what you work through in the story is the difference between that impulse that comes that rage, that anger from victims' families when they know what happened, and then what happens over time. Because in some ways, the rage, the anger, that doesn't necessarily go away, but their perspective on all of this seems to change. And that seems to be what you found in talking to some of these people, is it changes a bit.
Well, I think this is the difference between people who've had their family members murdered and people who have not, is you go through this kind of thought process. You go further into the depths of your thought process than people who haven't experienced this would not. You sort of do these mental gymnastics. And that's because when something like that happens to you, that's all you can think about. That's where your brain is.
Yeah.
And so you consider every possible scenario.
It's interesting that Valerie, so she has an idea of who she thinks killed her brother.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she's thinking, I could go out and kill these guys. That's what she said. But she talks to you about how over time, she was paying attention to the lives of these guys, and they just had crappy lives. And she saw some kind of karma in the fact that their lives didn't really play out. And say something about that. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, she, you know, as time grew on, she still had that anger, and she still had, you know, she still wished that they would be charged, and that, you know, something would happen, something, she would get her justice. But, you know, these boys were known around town. They were known to have serious drug problems. They were known to have really horrible home lives. And she watched it all played out as they grew older. Mm-hmm. Apparently, one died from a drug overdose. Another went to prison on something completely unrelated. And she realized that, you know, they had to live with what they did.
Yeah. And that's a punishment in of itself.
That is a punishment in and of itself, yes.
If I have to live with it, then I think the people who did it should have to live with it. And how their lives turned out tells me they didn't live with it very well.
Christine Stenquist, let's talk about her. Her story is really interesting. It's one of the stories you tell in your reporting. First of all, explain who she is and what happened to her family member.
Christine Stenquist, our listeners might know her because she's a medical marijuana advocate in the state of Utah, but she also has this other really harrowing story. She had a sister who lived in Georgia, and her sister was brutally murdered by her in-laws. And the state of Georgia came to Christine's family and said, "We want to seek the death penalty for these folks." And Christine and her family sort of huddled up and talked it through, and they realized that that's not who they were. They realized they sort of came to the same conclusion that Valerie came to, which was it's not going to give us any more justice to sentence these people to death. They're already going to go to prison. We know they're going to go to prison. It's not going to make us feel any better if they're put to death.
It's also interesting that prosecutors would come to the family members who are probably as vulnerable as it gets emotionally, and the prosecutors are asking the family to sign off on this death penalty. And you kind of raise this question in the piece, like, are they emotionally stable enough to make a judgment about that, these family members?
Well, Christine said herself, I was not emotionally stable enough to make this decision. And her family members felt the same way, because if you can only imagine being in that situation where something, the most horrific thing has happened to someone you love, and all the gory details are laid out for you. And then someone says, "Well, do you want me to kill this person over here who just did this to your family member?" Of course you're going to be up in arms. Of course you're going to have this sense that, you know, my justice needs to be served. Revenge is the thought that's going through your mind. And Christine says, you know, while all these things were going through my mind, I was thinking, you know, my emotions are being played on right now. I need to sit down and think about this.
You can imagine that each one of us had a range of emotions. Reflecting over the 15 months, the 4 weeks, almost 5 weeks that she was missing and none of us knew where she was, to finding that her body was dumped and her body couldn't even be recognized, that they had to use her breast implants to identify her. Knowing all those details over time, and then to have the state come to you and say, "We want to seek the death penalty," It was hard because I felt like my emotions were being played on. But we saw that that's not really who we were as a core. You go through those emotions, and emotions are good and they're healthy, but not always acting on them and having the emotional intelligence to know that I am having a hard time right now and I am not in the best decision-making mode. And I should not be part of making a decision of what happens to somebody else's life when I'm in the midst of my own sorrow.
We want to take a moment to shout out The Good Line for supporting this podcast. If you're building a brand, these guys can help you with websites, film, design. They're all about finding and telling stories that bring together a full brand experience. Check out the new Radio West Films website to find out what that means, or you can see what else they do at thegoodline.com.
Let's bring this back to Utah and Utah lawmakers. What are you hearing from lawmakers? You mentioned former Senator Urquhart, who had proposed this, got it passed, as you said, in the Senate, wasn't quite there in the House yet. What are you hearing from conservatives about how they're starting to change their ideas about the death penalty?
Well, there were three main arguments that Steve Urquhart made to me, and that was, one, that there isn't justice in the death penalty, not justice like we think there is justice in the death penalty. Families are promised that this person who murdered their family member will be killed. What they don't tell them is that it's probably going to take decades. The family members themselves might die before the person who committed this crime will actually die. And that was a big one for Steve Urquhart.
Yeah.
He said there's sort of the idea of the death penalty versus the idea or versus the death
reality.
Penalty, the reality
yeah.
of the death penalty in practice. So he thinks it's cruel to families and victims because they're promised something and that promise is never delivered. Number two is that it's just expensive. It's expensive for the state because these people will seek appeals until the appeals run out, and who knows when that will be. While someone else who has life in prison without parole is not getting that same opportunity, and justice is still served, some would argue in that case.
Yeah. How appealing is this to some lawmakers, the fiscal note to it? I mean, it's pretty expensive. I guess there's some dispute about that among some lawmakers about, in fact, whether it is all that much more expensive. But this does seem to appeal to some conservative lawmakers, the idea that let's end this because it just costs too much.
Yeah. Well, I think they're saying it's just not practical. It's just not practical. I mean, the money part is a big piece of it. But, you know, the fact that, you know, even though we have the death penalty, it's so rarely used, makes it just really impractical. And then we've got people like Representative Paul Ray, Republican Representative Paul Ray, who said, I don't care how much it costs because yeah. justice is justice for me. And that's what's most important, is that someone who is, you know, is a danger to society and is a danger to people even inside a prison cell shouldn't be on earth any longer.
We've tried to streamline the time of it and make it happen quicker. And with the technologies we have today with DNA and everything that we have, it's even a lot less likely that you're going to have somebody on death row that's innocent. And the fact that Utah has the highest bar in the nation when it comes to getting on death penalty. It takes all 12 jurors have to be unanimous in their support to do the death penalty. And so it's hard to get the death. You deserve the death penalty in Utah if you get the death penalty. Because it's not just because you sang too loud in the church choir on Sunday. It's because you're a monster and you deserve to die.
One of the things you write about in your piece is that it is difficult for lawmakers to give this up. It's even difficult for Democrats. One of the things that you write about is that this year it's Democrats who, at least one Democrat who has proposed a bill who has put someone who kills a first responder onto the list of people who could be executed.
That's right. And it's more than just one Democrat. There are several Democrats who are sponsoring bills that are a little bit taking more of like the law and order tack that Republicans typically take. That one is sponsored by Senator Karen Maine. And like you said, it would add first responders to the list of aggravated murder victims. And this is on top of a bill that passed last year or the year before that adds police officers to the list of aggravated murder victims. And right now we have about 60 of those aggravating factors on the books. So the reasons why you could be sentenced to death is that list is growing, and courts don't like that.
Yeah.
They could. There is a potential that the courts could strike down Utah's death penalty before lawmakers even get a chance to have at it themselves, because our list of reasons why you could be put to death is just growing. It's just getting so much broader.
That's growing. Yet at the same time, they're starting to rethink it. And I guess the question is, which impulse will win out in the end?
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this is sort of a new tack the Democrats are taking, and I'm not sure why, but it's interesting because they would typically be on board with something like a repeal in the past.
Whitney, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I should mention we continued this conversation on Radio West with the investigative journalist Vince Beiser and the conservative activist Darcy Van Orden. You can hear it at radiowest.org.
More to Say is a production of KUER News, editing by Lee Hale, production from Timothy Slover, and hosting from Doug Fabrizio.